Listen, when Larry and I were talking earlier in, about the...
I live in West Virginia. We lost all of our glass industry. We had numerous glass factories. There's only one left that makes sheet glass. All that went away. It's all gone.
Why not, is it?
You're a part of that.
And welcome to Eye to the Sky, the UFO Synopsis, here on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network, being broadcast live on UPRN 105.3 New Orleans. I want to remind my listeners that you can also listen to the UFO Paranormal Radio Network on your cell phone by calling 704-631-4060 and entering in the four-digit station ID code 2899. Tonight, my guest is Stephen Bassett. He is arguably the leading advocate in the nation for ending the 61-year government-imposed truth embargo regarding an extraterrestrial presence engaging the human race. He is a political activist, lobbyist, commentator, and columnist. He is the founder of the Paradigm Research Group, the Executive Director of the Extraterrestrial Phenomenon Political Action Committee, or XPAC, the creator of the Paradigm Clock, and the Executive Director of the X Conference. His work has been covered internationally. Since 1996, Mr. Bassett has assisted numerous organizations and initiatives working to raise public awareness, convene open congressional hearings to take government witness testimony, and to end the truth embargo. He has appeared on hundreds of radio and television and numerous talk shows and in numerous documentaries speaking to millions of people about the implications and likelihood of disclosure, the formal acknowledgement of the extraterrestrial presence by world government. And Stephen, you've been pretty busy this year, last year, haven't you?
Yeah, I think 2008 was a very good year for the disclosure process, not so good on some other things. Obviously, but a great deal has happened in the last 12 months, without question.
One thing I wanted to get into right off the bat on this is, how's the Million Facts been going? Has it been getting a big response?
Million Facts on Washington is doing okay. We've had, I'm sure, thousands of letters and emails have gone in. I'm sure of that. I've gotten copied on about 500, which is clearly a fraction of those that have actually been sent. The facts on Washington, the main facts on Washington, of course, which is home-based at factsonwashington.org, where all the information is there about where to send a letter and the web page to go to send an email to the transition headquarters of the new president. We launched it in October the 1st, actually, and then the letters and emails and facts started going in on November the 5th. A lot initially went into the senatorial office of Barack Obama, but then he resigned his position, of course. And they started going to the transition headquarters. The transition headquarters has not released a fax number, very possibly because they knew about the million facts on Washington. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't surprise me. It was heavily publicized. It's not as if they didn't know about it. I'm sure they did. But their address is there, and then there's an email, place you can email them directly on the change.gov website, which is the transition website for the president-elect. We moved along very nicely. I did, 50 media interviews, gotten some write-ups in a number of mainstream papers. And we're right on schedule, and was about, according to the plan, the master plan, we expected to see some mainstream media jumping into this around the end of October. Because it is a good story, and we felt optimistic of that. But as everyone knows, in that last week of October, all hell broke loose. We had essentially every financially bad decision that the United States has made in the last 30 years came to a head, and the markets imploded. Which is easily one of the biggest news stories of the last 30 years, 40 years. I mean, it's a huge story. And the media, of course, just was all over it, and it remains a big story. So it just really undercut our ability to get the million facts on Washington into the mainstream at the level I wanted at that time. That doesn't mean we're not having impact. We are having impact, and there's plenty on it. If you were to Google million facts on Washington, right, just put that phrase in, you get plenty of websites. Now, the nice thing about this particular initiative of Paradigm Research Group is that it was intended to last all the way through to the inauguration. So we have three more weeks, almost 3 weeks to go, and the financial news story is kind of playing out a little bit. So we anticipate we'll get some new exposure soon. I'm about to send out another national press release. We'll see some more exposure, and we'll continue to get a fairly nice stream of letters and emails going into the president, like calling for disclosure, calling for the end of the truth embargo, calling for the formal acknowledgement of the ET presence, which is a big deal. I have considered a fairly formidable issue. Some people say, well, you know, ETs are here, but there's really got problems with the economy, we got problems with the environment. I'm going, yeah, but ETs being here, that's big. That you just can't dismiss that. Like, it's not huge. It's very big. So far, so good. And we think that we're getting heard down there. In fact, let me tell you something new. Now, this is something new. When you go to my main website, paradigmresearchgroup.org, and you go into the PRG site, you will see a new link that just went up there to change.gov questions to the president-elect. Now, what's going on with that, right, is that they have done something pretty advanced. Look, this, let me tell you something. The age of internet politics is here. It's been coming for a while, and it's here big time. And so just plan on the political interaction between the people and the government being via the internet from this point forward, because it's just far more powerful than anything that we've ever had before. So what we've done at the transition headquarters is they created a contact page for sending in questions, not just an email, but questions. Specifically to the president-elect, saying, I want you to do this, I want you to do that, what about this, what about that? And they've gotten, 50,000 questions, I think, and then they're archiving these. The questions are sorted by area, environment, national security, economy, what have you. They're archiving them, and you can search those questions. You can pick some keywords and bring them up and see the questions that are being asked, what other people are asking, and you can vote on them. Meaning, this is a good question, this is a bad question. It's basically thumbs up, thumbs down. And then they are highlighting the top questions. In other words, in a national security area, you can bring up the top questions by those who are voting for these things. This is very sophisticated and very cool. Now, the punchline. As of today, we're approaching about 100 questions that have been submitted of all these thousands, dealing with UFO-ET disclosure issues. And I've reviewed them, and they're all, with one or two exceptions, very good. And now they're not getting the number of votes that some of the more standard questions are getting. They're not turning up in the top in the categories, but nevertheless, they're there, and they're getting votes. And I expect to get more. Look, in a typical category like national security, the top voted question is around 4,000, right? In other words, 4,000 people giving a thumbs up, and there it is, sitting at the top, or 3,000. Now, you know how many people are out in your audience right now. You know how many people are in the audience on this issue in the various programs? Millions. So if people would go to the change.gov website for the new transition, new president, and go to the questions section and start looking at these and start voting thumbs up on these UFO-ET disclosure questions, which they can bring up by searching UFO or extraterrestrial, either of those two terms, UFO and extraterrestrial. In other words, put in UFO and then try extraterrestrial, you'll get almost all of the questions. You can really drive those numbers up, and these questions will start emerging near the top of the various categories. This is an opportunity to interact with the new president of the United States. This is new. This is unprecedented. It's an extraordinary opportunity. I don't think they're playing with this here. This is not just a charade. They're not just doing this to go through the motions. They are, in fact, trying to find out what we care about. And so, again, we're seeing the Internet providing us another opportunity to put the UFO ET question near, to move it up, get it into the forefront, get it top of the priorities list. And I hope that your listeners will do this and they'll spread the word for others to do the same. So that's kind of where we're at with respect to interacting with the president. I think it's going pretty well, and we've got plenty of time to get our voice heard between now and Inauguration Day.
There's been a lot of coverage on the Internet, not just on the Million Facts, but on a lot of UFO and politics-related subjects.
Oh, yes. A great deal of coverage. I have this media archive, which I've been populating for some time now. It's one of my most time-consuming projects, again, at ParadigmResearchGroup.org. On the portal page, there's actually a quick link right to it, media coverage, where we're logging in links, direct links to mainstream news articles. We talked about this on your show before. And no tabloids, really, with a couple of exceptions. No paranormal press, nothing wrong with paranormal press, but we need to see what the mainstream is saying. That's important at this point. What is the mainstream doing? And
what the average Joe's reading.
What people are reading, exactly. And we're talking about English language press all over the world, and we are up to like 2,800 articles going back to 1947. Now, obviously, it's much harder to get access to those older articles, and so it's not really representative. However, in the last few years, relying on Google, Yahoo, and the usual sources, in 2006, I think we did 186 articles were locked in. 2006, English language press, dealing with the UFO ET issue, mainstream English language. 2007, it was 457. This year, over 1,100.
Wow.
1,100 articles. And more importantly, I've read them all, and if you were to go and read all those 1,100 articles for 2008, which cover everything, sightings and political events, exopolitics stuff, documents, releases, books, conferences, everything to do with UFO ETs. And it's not all, believe me, it's not all the articles. There are a number that I don't put up there, they're not strong enough, and there are a number that are just not coming across our radar. But generally speaking, it's now six times what we had in 2006 and three times what we had in 2000 and 2007. If you were to read these articles, less than 1% of these articles are what I would call truly negative, ridiculing articles that make light of the issue. In other words, out of 1,100, maybe 10 or less are that way. The other 1,090 are straight reporting. Now, a lot of people may not realize how important that is, but it's very important. There has been the sum total of all the work that's being done, all of the radio shows like yours, all of the media, all of the magazines, the books, the documentaries, the witnesses coming forward, the sum total of the entire citizen science and exopolitical activist movement for 60 years has brought us to a point finally where a sea change has occurred in the editorial offices of print, radio, and television. And they have made the decision that this issue will be covered and it will not be demeaned and it will be handled properly. And while we're still not seeing the kind of coverage we need to see and expect to see at the top levels of ABC, NBC, CBS, the major networks, plus the major papers like the New York Times, LA Times, we're still seeing a substantial increase in it. We're still seeing, there's been progress, no question. It's not where it needs to be, but it's definitely changing. And I think there has been some changes in their editorial policy, including consensus editorials in the New York Times, the LA Times. But overall, the policy, either formal or informal, written or unwritten, where the media, particularly at the top end, would go along with the truth embargo that had been in place, is over, and they're not going to do it. They're not in some cases plunging in, but they are not going along with this embargo anymore. They have calculated that embargo is over, and it is. I believe that it really ended in a formal way in 99, and the truth embargo has essentially been like a train. You know, they took their foot off the pedal, off the accelerator, in about 99, and this train has just been moving down the tracks under its own momentum, but it's got a lot of momentum. And that's where we are. And so the media coverage has been extended. I cannot keep up with it. There's so much coming in that I simply cannot log these articles in fast enough. Sometimes I have to spend an entire day logging in and putting up links to these articles covering this issue. I can't even imagine how many we will see next year. Of course, if we have disclosure, we'll see thousands upon thousands upon thousands. If we don't have disclosure, we're still going to see a huge amount of press either way. So that's where we are media-wise, and that's a very significant thing and why people need to be prepared. As I've said many times, perhaps too many times, be prepared for disclosure to take place at any time, certainly any time after January 20.
Speaking of the mainstream media, what's your opinion over what CNN pulled with Miles O'Brien and their entire science correspondence?
I believe that I've looked into it. I believe that this had nothing to do with the ET issue. That they made a very dumb decision to eliminate their science section. There's cutbacks going on all over the media. Because of the financial fiasco that's going on, they're cutting. They're not waiting. They're cutting now. The effect that the cable news stations they live and die on advertising. Lord knows if you watch cable news, that's one of the biggest problems with it. The number of ads is endless, right? And they're all for illnesses. You watch a cable news and you just feel an ancient. Right, because every conceivable disease, there's a medicine being advertised for it, and a few things that are not diseases, but in any event, they've had to cut back, and they're going to slash like crazy, and they just threw the science division out. Now it's going to look a little silly, particularly if we get disclosure in the spring, which will just create a massive interest in science. But the fact is, they can hire a science division back in a day. It's not a big deal for them. So it's unfortunate for Miles. I appreciate that series. I thought it was a good series, and you can actually, we've got links up to it. In fact, at my website, patternresearchgroup.org, you go to the PRG main page. I've got the links to all five of those shows on YouTube. Love YouTube. And Miles did a fairly good job. I was happy with those. But don't worry. He'll be back. The ET disclosure issue is just going to launch a global, massive renaissance in science education and interest in science, unlike anything we've ever seen before. And they'll be hiring science press all over the place, and God bless them.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that Miles O'Brien had, on camera and live, had told about his sighting. You know, he mm-hmm. told everybody, I'm a pilot, mm-hmm. I saw this, you know, and they kind of gave him a bad time about it. I mean, the co-anchors with him.
Yeah, that's not unusual. Again, we're very sensitive. I mean, it's good that we're sensitive to these things, and it's very notable. I mean, it shows you how sophisticated we've gotten and how interconnected we are. So if somebody does a UFO series and then gets fired the next day, we're on it. I mean, it's all over the net, and it's getting passed around through emails, and we're checking into it, and people are calling up the station. Same thing happened when Angela Joyner had to leave what was the name of the paper there, do you recall?
I'm not sure.
I think it was Stephenville Courier, Tribune or Tribune Courier. But she had to leave, and it really was related. It was related to the UFO issue. She was covering the thing. She was getting deluged with emails and everything, and frankly, she could have just written a gazillion stories. But it's a small paper, limited staff, and they needed her doing other stuff. And it was kind of awkward. It was kind of a problem. And I think it was kind of a mutual thing. Maybe not so mutual. But she sort of understood it and wasn't too upset by it. But the fact is that there hadn't been a sighting in Stephenville, a major sighting. She'd probably still be working for that paper. Now, I'm not, but so, but we, and we were aware of that, and we were all over it. So, and if somebody dies, I mean, recently we had a witness who was had given some very interesting witness testimony that was primarily focused at Project Camelot, who suddenly died at a very young age. It was like 40, 42, 43, something like that. And immediately that went out to the community, and we're aware of it. We'll probably continue to follow it, try to get information. Hopefully we'll find out what the outcome of that was, just in case. And that doesn't mean that there's connection, but it means that we are now highly sophisticated, very organized, and we're paying attention to the stuff that we couldn't do this 10 years ago, even 10 years ago, certainly not 20 or 30 years ago. And this is another reason why efforts, any effort, or even the thought of playing games with this issue anymore, getting nasty, interfering, the OMIB stuff, right? It's just not going to work. And I think the government knows this. They may be doing that in some other areas, but not here. We're just too aware. And that's good. That's the way it should be.
One case that I've been following, and I know you have been too, and I know you know that I'm really interested in it, is Gary McKinnon.
Mm-hmm.
His next court date is January 20th. He's still in England. He hasn't been extradited yet.
Yeah.
How do you think that's going to go, where it's at, where, the way it stands now?
It's going exactly where I predicted it would go, and I've actually, I said this on some of my updates, I think, one time or another, PRG updates, which I send out periodically to those who subscribe at my website. They've done everything they could to stall it until the next administration, all right?
Yeah.
And they really did. I mean, they went to the European Court of Appeals. They went to the House of Guinness, whatever they could to delay it, because I'm pretty confident that once the new administration is in power, they're going to drop that whole case like a hot potato. And Gary's not going anywhere. I would be stunned if the Barack Obama administration allowed the extradition of Gary McKinnon. I just would be stunned. So I don't expect it. I think that's what will happen. But I could be wrong. If he is extradited to the U.S. And goes on trial, I think it's going to be a very big mistake for the national security structures. I think they will have miscalculated here. I'm not endorsing hacking government computers, believe me. And a lot of this has to do with Patriot Act 911, post-911 hypervigilance. But there is a UFO connection here. And the overall case is not good. And so if they were to take this to trial, the publicity is going to be quite extensive. And it's going to be almost universally bad for the U.S. government. And could even result in the UFO question being brought into a case, which would be a disaster for the government. We have, for many years, various people, Hoagland, Peter Gersten, David Jenks, a number of people, and Larry Bryant, and many people have tried to come up with a way to get the UFO question into a court of law so that the issue of the UFO reality, the ET presence, could in fact be a matter of the case itself, thus putting it under discovery, allowing testimony. And, of course, that simply hasn't happened because the government would go nuts. I mean, it would be a disaster because we could bring in witnesses upon witnesses upon witnesses under oath, and it would just attract national attention. So the government is not going to let that happen, and never has, really. But, of course, the judge, with the pressure from the government, could find a way to not allow anything like that into the case. They could keep it out. But there would be pressure to bring it in, and that creates a story in and of itself. So the whole thing would be a publicity disaster. So, again, I think Gary is not going to be going anywhere, and I think it's going to get resolved there. And hopefully, you know, other people will learn a lesson that, look, we don't have to hack government computers to get information on the UFO question. We've got tons of it. You don't have to break the law to get the information. We've got more than enough testimony, more than enough evidence to prove the ET presence many times over. So don't do that, right? Because these are very interesting, and these are difficult and complicated times, and the fact that you're looking for UFOs is not going to in any way assuage the government's sympathy or lack of it. Going into government computers, particularly now, is a really bad idea, and I encourage nobody to do that. And it won't help the UFO issue, really. It generally won't help the UFO issue. The Gary McKinnon case is not advanced the UFO issue. If it went to trial, it might. But I don't think we want Gary to go through that, just so we get a little extra few points here. So again, let's hope Gary gets to stay in England, gets a community service sentence, promises not to do it again, and let's hope that we get this issue resolved in April and we can move on and not have to fiddle with this kind of stuff, because it's kind of a waste of time in a way.
Well, I really believe, though, that if he did go to court, that he, you know, the UFO subject would come up, because basically that's what he was looking for, was UFO.
Yeah, but you know how it is. I mean, it's up to a judge to determine what evidence is, can be permissible in that court of law. And the government could bring a lot of pressure on such on a judge, even if the judge was so disposed. And it would be very easy for that to be kept out. This happens all the time. So I was never optimistic that the UFO issue could be brought into the actual trial itself. Which may or may not, and that may not have been a good thing. I mean, if he actually went to trial, it may not be a good thing. And ultimately, it's what's in his best interest, not in what's our best interest. It's his life to be on trial.
This is true.
And I never wanted to exploit that. And I never encouraged anybody to exploit Gary McKinnon's case for the UFO issue. I think that's wrong. Overall, that's where it's at. And I just think people should probably anticipate that the Obama administration is going to drop that. That would be very interesting. It would be a notable thing if they do drop this matter. And it will be publicized, I think, quite well if they do. And that will be an interesting sign of where they're going. And then Gary McKinnon get back to whatever life, you know, he's got out there, and hopefully get back to normal. And we can get on with what we have to do, which is ending the truth embargo.
I agree. It would be a horrible thing if they did have to, if they did extradite him here to go to trial here in the state.
Yeah.
I think that would be absolutely horrible.
It would be horrible, but understand, there have been many other instances of people who have been sucked into this whirlwind, far worse cases than Gary McKinnon, and very bad things have happened. So in the larger scheme of things, we need to keep it perspective.
Moving on a bit, what do you think of Jeff Peckman getting so much coverage in the Denver papers? Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Good thing. It was remarkable. I think that the two most... Well, first of all, Jeff Peckman is a smart guy. He has a good demeanor to be an activist, right? He's not a rabble rouser. He's kind of he's almost an academic type, kind of laid back, totally non-threatening. So that can be an excellent asset if you're an activist raising complicated issues. And it was quite extraordinary that he was able to get into the public domain with the issue of the Denver ballot initiative to get an extraterrestrial commission in Denver, just a U.S. city. Not any city, though. Significant city, Denver, in many ways. And get some attention, get some press, and then have that escalate. And he found a way to escalate it right up to the point where he's getting worldwide attention and an appearance on the David Letterman show. This was a wonderful exercise in what we'll call activist engagement of the media. I envy him. I've never really pulled off anything at that level. Now, without getting into the merits of every aspect of this, it was a very successful news cycle, double news cycle. And it was particularly notable because the Rocky Mountain News, which is a mainstream paper, like many mainstream papers, it may be out of business soon, but whatever, that's the fault of the Internet. The Rocky Mountain News has been around a long time. I used to read it all the time when I lived in Denver many years ago. The author there, and the fellow's name escapes me now. I think it's what's the name of the writer that did this? Boy, it just escapes my attention. David Chacon seems to stand out, but it might not have been. It might have been another name. In any event, one reporter essentially wrote at least 16 articles. Now, I do not recall any UFO-related ET issue ever covered by any paper to that degree, single situation. I don't think it's ever happened. That's 16 articles, and they were all straight, no problems. They weren't ridiculing. They covered what here's what's going on, and wrote it up. Now, some other people jumped in. I think there was like a couple of bloggers on the Rocky Mountain News. They made fun of it, but not the reporter. He covered it straight. That's an enormous amount of coverage, which helped to generate the interest national, because when articles are appearing in a major paper like that over and over again, it gets people's attention. So that was very, very significant. Then he worked from that, using that as the base. He then made a brilliant maneuver where they called a press conference to further, quote, discuss the Denver ballot initiative, which was the issue in play. And it was significant. The reason it was a significant issue and the reason why it was getting covered is that it was quite clear that he could get that ballot initiative on, he could get that initiative on the ballot. He knew how to get the signatures. He'd done it before. And if it's on the ballot, it's going to be voted on. And that's real politique, isn't it? So it was worthy of attention. But he used that as the platform. And then he calls a press conference. And then he tosses into the mix the fact that he's going to show one of the Stan Romanek videos, which had been out there, and that case had been around a long time. Stan's a pretty good guy, and he's worked very hard to try to get his story out, as have many other contactees. I can't specifically speak to the substance of Stan Romanek's story. I will say this. I think there's a basis for it to be considered very seriously. But there are very few videos of aliens out there, and Stan supposedly had one. So they're going to show that. Well, that just exploded the interest. Somewhat reminiscent of the alien autopsy business going back to 1994, 95, but much different. And well, I'd say different in a lot of ways. The Romanek video is fairly straightforward. It's either real or it's not. It's a pretty convincing video, in my opinion. I loved a lot of the spoofs that were done. It's generated probably as many spoofs as any video has ever been on YouTube. They were wonderful. They're all funny. But the point is, the original one is pretty interesting. It's not complicated. There's not a lot of history here. It's either real or it's not. It's very straightforward. It's not complicated. So it was not an unreasonable thing, and it generated a huge amount of interest, which then got him on David Letterman's show. This, to me, is activism. This is what activism is about. If you're going to engage a government the size of the United States government, or any major government, the Chinese government, the Russian government, whatever, on issues that are high-level, significant issues, you're not going to do it by mimeographing tomes and handing them out in the street corners, and you're not going to do it by sending letters to the editors of various papers. You have got to figure out how to engage the media, get their attention, get your puss in front of cameras and microphones, and speak to the issue in front of the largest audience as possible. If you can't do that, then don't even get into activism, because you're not going to go anywhere, not going to accomplish a damn thing. And he showed it could be done. He was an excellent case. The others have had good success, too. So that's kind of the Jeff my perspective on Jeff Peckman. Now he's staying with us, and what he's doing lately is he's taking advantage of the growing internet journalism. There's so much new journalism. Talking about the internet, I can't keep track of that either. And one of the new journalistic threads is a site called Examiner.com. I'm not even sure exactly what's going on with that. I haven't yet figured out, but it's kind of like, well, you know how when you go into a city like a Denver, Boulder, even Phoenix, whatever, you'll have this. There's significant. There'll be one significant alternative paper, the New Times, Westword, whatever, right? Alternatives three, pick it up, right? And they've gotten very substantive. Well, the Examiner is kind of creating a kind of an internet mag or paper for different cities. And you've got Examiner Washington, you've got Examiner Denver, Examiner Dallas, and so forth. and people are submitting sort of a little like American Journal and American Chronicle, rather, and Op-Ed News, where people can submit stuff. Anybody can submit stuff, and it can be published. But I think it goes through editorial review. Well, he is one of a number of people that are writing UFOET-related material for Examiner.com. Now, I'm following these, and overall, they're not bad. They're pretty good. Just as the majority of the pieces being done on American Chronicle are pretty good. It's funny, when people, even though they're not getting paid anything, and it's not like you're going to get published in the New York Times, but when people write up stuff for some of these online publications, like Op-Ed News and American Truth, they really try hard to write something meaningful, across the T's, dot the I's, and the material is remarkably pretty good. I think comparable in many cases to the best columnists, the good columnists in the standard papers. So Jeff has been writing a number of things at theexaminer.com and keeping himself in play. So I expect to hear more from Jeff. And I think he's here to stay. He's going to be a leading activist in this field. We need all the activists we can get right now.
I'd like to point out also that Stan Romanat's book, Messages, the World's Most Documented Extraterrestrial Contact Story, is available now through Amazon. excuse me. With all the political activism that's going on and all the exopolitics groups that are out there, yours included, and Alfred Weber and all this, where do you see them, all these groups, see them in the next 6 months down the road, to a year down the road?
Well, it's all about disclosure. Exopolitics essentially is trying to take the era of ufology and all that was done, the fundamental results of the UFO research of 50-some years, really through 91, 47, 44 years, and taking that, well, I say take it, exopolitics is fundamentally based on the, not assumption, but conviction that the work of the UFO researchers, which are still around, I mean, they haven't gone anywhere, there's still plenty of them around, they're still doing UFO, which is great, that's no problem. But the UFO research from 1947 to 1991, which of course includes all the work of NICAP, APRO, CUPOS, and MUFON, right, as well as all the independent researchers, that they proved, if you were to review that work, they proved conclusively there's an extraterrestrial presence. I'm not saying they proved exactly where they're from, or who these entities are, or what their names are, what they have for breakfast, and how their ships operate, but it proved that they are here, beyond any reasonable doubt. That is the fundamental starting point for exopolitics. Now, once you accept that, then you have the basis for some significant political activism, because that's a big deal, right? That's not like, okay, well, there's ETs here, fine. Let's put that aside. Now, what else are we going to deal with? No. You say, oh, there. But what are we going to do about that? So exopolitics is about doing something about it. Well, what we need to do, and it's pretty clear what we need to do, is we have to get a disclosure event. That's been the focus of exopolitics. It's not the only thing that needs to be done. There's plenty more. I assure you, we'll all be quite busy for the rest of our lives. But without question, we have to have the disclosure of it, meaning that the government has finally got to say, yes, they are here. Doesn't sound like much. It's a lot. Government has to reverse its policy on the truth embargo and say, okay, they're here. They can apologize, not apologize for the embargo. That's up to them. But end the embargo and acknowledge ET presence must happen. Without that, most of the social, political, and scientific options to the mainstream, or I say to the public in general, not only here but in other countries, are closed off. What they're doing in the underground facilities and in the black world, that's another matter. They can do what they want, but that's the problem. They do what they want without scrutiny, and we're cut out of the loop. That's not acceptable. So exopolitics is about, first and foremost, effectuating the disclosure event, which is where we've been heading since 1991. We're 17 years in now. Now, there are plenty of people that don't think the exopolitical movement is a good thing. They don't like it. They don't like the way the exopoliticians talk. They think they think they get too far afield. They make too many assumptions. They talk about stuff that hasn't been proven. They speculate. They pretty much are doing what political scientists have been doing for the last 4,000 years, right? Now it's exopolitical science, right? I mean, does anybody really think political science is all about absolutely rock-solid proven scientific reality? That when some government program is cooked up or some political party gets a plank in their platform, that it's all based on rock-solid scientific evidence? No. It's about science, political science, which is really not a science, is it? So exopolitics is messy that way. Well, so what? That's the way it is. And they're not happy about that. Fine, I understand. And I understand that there are many, many issues that one can raise with respect to the positions of various people in the field, whether it's me or Sauer or Greer or Weber or name them. There's many. What it comes down to is this. It's all about disclosure. The exopolitical thing will sort itself out pretty quickly, and we'll get, how would you say, tighten up fairly quickly once disclosure has taken place. And the whole basis for exopolitics, the whole need for it, the reason for it, and its justification will be instantaneous at that point. And Wikipedia will put the exopolitics section back in their encyclopedia, which they removed. And the dictionaries will immediately accept exopolitics, of course, as a word, which they're close to doing anyway. And the field will be real and will become a part of our new reality, because there isn't a better term that describes the social political engagement of the issue than exopolitics. So I can put the better one, but fine, extraterrestrial politics. Well, it's too long. So that's where we're at, and that's where we're going. But without disclosure, we'll have an ongoing debate, but an ongoing kind of internal conflict over the merits of exopolitics, and then once disclosure's over, that conflict will, I think, disappear pretty quickly. Now, the research will go on, but it'll be more extensive and more funded. But the political process will also go on, and it needs to be funded as well, and hopefully that'll happen.
I'm hoping too. Let's see. We've got about 9 minutes before we go to break. You've been involved in a lot of conferences, your own included.
Mm-hmm.
There's been some rumors that the X conference scheduled for this year, I believe in April, is having a little difficulty getting off the ground.
Well, the conference is on the ground. Let's rephrase that. The conference is already, there's been 4 X conferences. This will be the 5th. And what's the problem right now is the timing of it. The month that this conference is planned to be in has been April. We had to deviate 1 year, went to September. But that was for various reasons. April is the slot for this conference. And that's when I want to hold it. And this would be the 4th one that's in April. We had one in September. It's the 5th X conference. But given the timing of it is the conference schedule April 17, and then the economic blow up occurred in the end of October, just about 5.5 months out, which is a very bad timing for the conference. People are still trying to get their bearings here, right? A lot of people lost a fortune. How many trillions of dollars was subtracted from the total assets of the American business? Some god awful number, 4, 5, 6 trillions. To paraphrase what Lord is my ancient mind has lost
and had a
senior moment.
Today.
He was a famous Speaker of the House or leader in the Senate. I forgot. Anyway, he was famous for saying, when talking about some budget issues, that $1 billion here, $1 billion there. I mean, after a while, it'll add up to real money. Well, now it's $1 trillion here, $1 trillion there. Pretty soon, you're talking about real money. Dirksen, right? The guy that named it was Dirksen that was famous for that quote. $1 trillion is a lot of money. Well, we just lost $3, 4, 5, 6 trillion. So people are not in a, boy, where do they want to fly to next? And it's really tough, and I don't know what to expect. Right? Now, factor in the possibility that disclosure could very well take place in the spring. What is a conference guy to do? Right? I assure you, if disclosure takes place, we're gonna have people hanging out of the hotel rooms, the windows at that conference. We'll be booked over well over the limit. If it doesn't take place, and the economy continues to scare the hell out of everybody, I don't know what we're going to do. So all I can say right now is that we're booked for April 17th through 19th. I have a couple speakers booked, but I'm holding off on signing up more speakers because, one, I want to see where things are going, and, two, I really want to get people that are very contemporary to what's happening next year. Nothing against anybody else. I'm just saying that things are happening every week. Something new is going on, and I'm going to try to bring in people, not only some people we've never seen before, but also people that are very contemporary to events happening in what, January, February, March of next year. So the speaker lineup is still out there. I've got a couple signed up. Jeff Peckman is committed. Art Campbell is committed. That's fine. But a few others. Richard Dolan is committed as well. Richard is like a mainstay of the X conference. He'll always be at there. He's a critical person to all this. So we'll see what happens. Let us hope that things settle down in the economy. Let's hope that some people can make some decisions about signing up for the conference. And we'll move ahead. If necessary, I may have to reschedule it for later in the year, in which case I'll do that. But I don't want to worry about it too much right now. The X conference is going to be around one way or another. It's 4 years in. It's well established. We'll do what we have to do to make things all work out. The other conferences are generally in pretty good shape. I know that, of course, Laughlin is extremely well established, so it'll be going down in February, and hopefully they'll have a strong turnout regardless of the economy. Laughlin, of course, is well known because it's very, very cost effective there. They have very, very inexpensive rooms at the Aquarius Hotel. And I will be at Laughlin at the International UFO Conference. I think it's like February, 17 to 28, something like that. And I plan to be there. So it's one of the first conferences that is post-economic apocalypse, you know what I'm saying?
Sure.
But Nicole Irving's doing a fantastic job and really upgrading everything, and I anticipate they'll be fine. And then Aztec, I think, is before me. There's another one that's on my mind. So these initial conferences, Aztec, IUFOC, and Laughlin, and, of course, mine, X Conference, are the first ones to post this economic meltdown. So we're sorting things out, and hopefully things will be fine next year. But clearly, these are unusual times, and we're going to do the best we can to adjust. Now, if disclosure happens, blame me. There's going to be no trouble getting people to come to these kinds of conferences, regardless of the economy. And as you know, I believe the disclosure is in the works, and we should see it in the first 100 days of the next administration.
There's so much I want to get into tonight. And let's see, we've got about 3 minutes before we go to break. Tell you what, why don't you give the Million Facts web address, the PRG web address?
Sure. The Million Facts on Washington, which is still ongoing and will be continue ongoing through Inauguration Day. All the information you need is at factsonwashington.org. If you're at Facebook, if you're one of the 130 million Facebook people out there, I've become a big Facebook guy. I'm up to 309 friends, let me tell you. I'm cooking. There is a Million Facts on Washington Facebook group. You can go there. Join up, please, and get the information there. The PRG's main site, of course, is paradigmresearchgroup.org. If you go there, you can link into all of the PRG sites, the main one being PRG, and there's stuff keep you busy there for weeks. And for those who want to get in touch with PRG, you want to email PRG@paradigmresearchgroup.org.
Fantastic. You have been so active in getting disclosure out. And also with your conferences, you've been doing basically the same I'm doing here with this show, is to educate the public. Mm-hmm. You know, personally, I think you deserve a huge pat on the back for all the work and effort that you've put in to all of this.
Well, I appreciate that. We're doing the best we can. Your shows like yours are definitely aiming to educate the public. A lot of what I do is very much aimed at educating the political press and the political people in Washington. In other words, not the members, not only just the members of Congress, their staff, and all the other operatives and political people in town. Remember, every issue in the world is all represented there. We're trying to just raise that awareness level in Washington, D.C., saturate it with this issue, and that's been the principal focus of PRG from the beginning. It's still based in Washington, just outside of Washington, Bethesda. It's always going to be there. You know, a lot of people don't like Washington. They hate it. They think that it's the devil, and they wish the whole thing go away, and we'd all be better off. But, you know, it doesn't work that way. It is the capital of the United States. We are still a major power, and what goes on in that town is extremely important. And so if you want to affect government change, you had better deal with it, and that's what PRG's job has been primarily since July of 1996.
And you've been doing a great job of that. And on that note, we need to head for a break, and we'll be back here in a little while on Eye to the Sky, the UFO Synopsis, here on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network, and on live on UPRN 105.3 New Orleans. And welcome back to Eye to the Sky, the UFO Synopsis, here on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network, being broadcast live on UPRN 105.3 in New Orleans. Tonight we're speaking with Stephen Bassett, and I got a couple of things I'd like to say here before we go back to talking with Stephen. I'd like to send a shout-out to my mother-in-law, Bernice, who, like me, isn't feeling quite as chipper today as usual. And also I'd like to let everyone know that the International Astronomy Union has named 2009 as the International Year of Astronomy. And if you go to my website, that's eyetothesky.net, that's E-Y-E, the number 2, the sky, .net, there's a link, there's a link on my main page there where you can go and check that out. Stephen, during the break, we were kind of discussing a little bit on Barack Obama's, or President-elect Barack Obama's administration picks with ties to the UFO topic. What do you see their possible effect on, not so much goading, but suggesting that President Obama
sure.
do some work on disclosure?
One of the two significant questions with respect to disclosure, besides when it happens, is what nation will be the first to acknowledge the ET presence, and then who will be the party in power in that nation. Now, let's confine it to the U.S., which has generally been the de facto default, I guess, on this for some time, though that could change at any moment. Well, one of the principal jobs that I've had since 96 is following all this very closely. I mean, very interested and keeping tabs on what's going on in case there's any indicators that we're getting close, which is, of course, what the paradigm clock is all about. By the way, I've got to get a press release out on the paradigm clock. I haven't done anything in a long time. But I created the paradigm clock in 1998. As a way to sort of attract attention to this idea of when is disclosure going to happen, and the paradigm clock is designed so that if disclosure takes place, that's when the clock turns to midnight. Right? Midnight, the paradigm clock is disclosure, and then over the years we moved it closer, further from midnight. Right, and for some time now, it's been set at 15 seconds to midnight because I think we've been on the verge of disclosure for some time. But I need to put something out. In any event, following this and looking for all the signs, reading the tea leaves is part of my what I have to do. For some time, I have been focusing very much on the Democratic Party because it appeared to me that the Democratic Party was looking to seize the day here. Carpe disclosure. Right? The Republicans, less so. And there have been plenty of indicators that something's going on behind the scenes in the Democratic Party on this issue. And we talked about it. It's been out there for some time. And it goes all the way. It goes back, primarily goes back to 1993 when Rockefeller approached the Clinton administration about disclosing all the UFO documents, getting them all out, which would end the truth embargo pretty quickly if the government were to dump out what it has. And goes forward from there. And various people are involved and have come forward and done things. So, okay, given all of that, over time, it appeared to me that the Democrats were going to try to, were the party most likely to disclose. And eventually, I became sufficiently convinced of this that I have been going very public about the fact that if the Democrats win in 2008, the disclosure was quite likely. Well, they did win. Right? Now, one of the very first things that we wanted to look for once they won that election was who do they appoint to various positions? Because if disclosure is in the works, I mean, this is a big deal, as we've already said. It's not just one of many, many policies that they may want to pursue. It is a huge deal, and therefore has impact on a range of major appointments and leaders within the new administration. In other words, you literally you've got to be thinking about who you select to various positions if disclosure is on your mind. Okay, fine. That's not an unreasonable assessment. And therefore, it's not inappropriate to look ahead and say, okay, who would they pick? Who should they pick? And if they pick for certain positions people, do these people reflect the disclosure hypothesis or not? Well, the fact is that now we're approximately 50 days into the a little over 50 days into the transition, and the appointments have been stunningly in concordance with a disclosure hypothesis. Astounding, even. All right, and let's quickly review. Back in July of last year, 2008, I was on Fox News, Fox and Friends. And the reason I was on Fox and Friends is that earlier in 2008, I published to the internet a article called The ET Ticket. In fact, it was in UFO Magazine. I think it might have even been in Fate Magazine. American Chronicle Op-Ed News on my website, whatever, it's all out there. Just Google ET Ticket comes up. And it got a lot of attention. It's intended to get a lot of attention. It's a simple concept. It's basically saying, look, you got 20 candidates on the Republican side, you got 20 candidates on the Democratic side. In fact, they're up to our keystering candidates. If you had to pick a pair that would be the best presidential, vice presidential ticket reflecting disclosure or the ET issue, what pair would be the best of all these people there? And it wasn't hard to conclude in my mind that the most connected ticket would have been Hillary Clinton as president and Bill Richardson as vice president, and it was particularly resonant to those that read the article, because the fact was is that back then that ticket was considered a very likely ticket for the Democratic Party, Clinton and Richardson, which is quite interesting in my opinion. The connection Hillary, of course, is the Rockefeller Initiative, and It's all over the net. It's been out there for some time, thanks to the work of Grant Cameron and others. I went further. I actually put the key documents that Grant had gotten through FOIA, I actually put them right up on the Internet, you know, under the Rockefeller Initiative section of the Paradigm Research Group website, which confirm, completely document the entire effort that went on there from 93 to 96 that the press chose not to cover. And two of those documents actually refer to Hillary Clinton and the fact that she was aware of what was going on. And John Podesta was in the administration. He followed it. Bill Richardson was in the Congress. He was watching what was going on. Bill Clinton, of course, was watching going on as president. And then Bill Richardson came out in 2004 and asserted himself on this issue, which he didn't have to do, and it was particularly risky given that he clearly was a presidential, vice presidential a possibility, and in fact was intending to run for president. When he challenged the Roswell explanation of the government, which is a non-trivial thing. The government said, matter of fact, this is a Mogul balloon. It was a Mogul. It wasn't like, well, we don't know what happened there, but we think it was a Mogul balloon. They said it was a Mogul balloon, and the rest of the story, everything that had been researched in all of those years was wrong. And Richardson said, I don't think that explanation holds water, essentially. Very remarkable thing. Okay, so come July, I'm at the Roswell Festival, which they have every year. I intend to be there next year, or this year, rather. Could be a big one this year, let me tell you. If the disclosure takes place in April, you better have your Roswell hotel room booked early, or you're going to be camping out in Roswell. In any event, I'm on Fox News, and they had read this article, and that's why they brought me on to talk about it, so they had some preparation time. So I get on there, and I'm watching the monitor out of the TV truck, and I happen to notice that as I come on, they put this graphic right up behind the, you know how they do that, put a graphic up on the screen. And here is Bill, it's got Hillary Clinton, nice picture of Hillary Clinton, nice picture of Bill Clinton with a big giant saucer in the middle. So this whole idea of these people being connected to this issue was well in play, well back in 98. John Podesta's connection goes all the way back to 93 as well. He was fully aware of the Rockefeller Initiative. Clinton couldn't really take direct action on it, never did, but he talked about ETs a number of times, referred to the issue in various occasions. He actually asked Webster Hubble to look into the issue. That was a response to the Rockefeller Initiative. I mean, that didn't go anywhere. Got Webster in a lot of trouble, too. But Podesta, who is one very sharp cookie, believe me, he's like the brain trust of the Democratic Party. Right? He's the equivalent of about 26 Dick Morrises, frankly. He was a significant advisor, went on to become chief of staff. He asked Podesta to at least see what they could do about revising and improving the declassification protocols, which he did, resulting in millions of documents being released. Believe me, there's billions more, which we pay a fortune every year to keep classified. But at least it was a nice gesture, and he's proud of that, and he's talked about it. So Podesta is hooked to the issue. And then in 2002, 2003, as we've talked about, he supported the creation of the Coalition for Freedom of Information, that organization funded by the Sci-Fi Channel, and he was a spokesperson in a way for it. And he announced, he led off the press conferences both those years and called for the release of the documents. And part of that, one of those appearances is captured on video and it's up on YouTube. Not the whole press conference, but the segment that the press conference is out there. I know that it's Sci-Fi Channel's got the whole thing, and it may be you can go watch the whole press conference at Sci-Fi Channel, and not Sci-Fi, but it's a Coalition of Freedom of Information website. I'm not sure. That's freedomofinfo.org. But in any event, he's completely outed on the issue in 2002, 2003. In fact, he even appeared in a documentary that they created. He's calling for the release of the UFO documents. Like everybody knows that if the government were to release all the UFO documents they got, the truth embargo would be over in a week. He knows, so he knows the implications of that. So there we got that, right? I'll be fine. All this is known and it's out there. And let's be clear. The political arena in the last 20 years has been nasty. The fights and the elections have been brutal, as we all know, right? Going back to 2000, going back beyond that. And so you screw up, right? You're a political candidate, and you screw up, and you're toast in a matter of sometimes weeks. A classic example of that was George Allen, who was a rising star in the Republican Party, governor of, I believe it was governor running for senator, or senator running for governor of Virginia, I forget which. The point is that he made a stupid remark about an African-American, what they call opposition researcher that was attending one of his rallies, called him a macaca. That hit the YouTube and the Internet. He was finished inside a week. You screw up, you're toast. And this has happened. People have seen this repeatedly, all right? Not like you're a candidate, but if you're associated with a candidate and you say something and it's on YouTube, whatever, they will go after you and burn you at the stake. So let's be clear. In 2002 and 2003, John Podesta came out of the closet on the UFO issue. In 2004, Bill Richardson came out of the closet on the UFO issue. In 1993 to 1996, the Clintons were both watching and involved with an effort by a close friend and major supporter, Lawrence Rockefeller, to end the UFO cover right then and there. All right? And from that point forward, 93 on, in spite of everything else that's happened, no effort, no concerted effort was made by the opposition to attack Richardson, Podesta, or the Clintons on the UFO issue. Under the normal protocols that operate in Washington, they should have been savagely attacked, called everything in the book. You know all the epithets that are used about people that believe, quote, in ETs. They should have been brutalized and destroyed politically. They weren't. Which means that the Republican, how would you say, opposition teams, which, as we know, are capable of bringing down a bull elephant at full stride, if they're so disposed, for some reason calculated that attacking major political figures in the Democratic Party in the UFO issue was not a good idea. I will leave it to your listeners' imagination as to why they may not have chosen to do that. Now, with that in mind, comes November the 5th, the day after the election, and I'm paying very close attention to what's going to happen next, because I believe that the early actions, of the new administration in transition would be the best indicators yet as to whether or not the disclosure agenda is in the works for the Democratic Party, the Democratic administration. And here is what happened. The first and most important pick of the new president, everyone knows this, is the head of the transition team. Co-chair, chair, doesn't matter. Usually, even if there's a co-chair, one person is clearly the head of the team. Who did he pick? John Podesta. Right? Bingo. Right off the bat. Right? John Podesta. We discussed the connection. Notable. Now, John, of course, is going to have a significant impact on other selections. He's going to have a significant impact on everything. First indicator. Right? Let me go forward. The next most important pick for the new president is the Secretary of State. The Secretary of State is generally considered the second most powerful position in an administration, even more powerful than the vice president. This was possibly not the case, almost it wasn't the case in the Bush administration. Dick Cheney was more powerful than the Secretary of State. Something more powerful than the president, in any event. That was the exception to the rule. Very important pick. Particularly in these times, because the Secretary of State is the interface between the government and the rest of the world, another 200 and some nations. So if anything big is going to happen, anything big is going to go down, it's the Secretary of State that's going to be fielding those questions, dealing with the ambassadors, explaining, assuaging, whatever. Very important. So, who did they pick? Hillary Clinton. Now, this was particularly notable because there were very substantial arguments out there that Hillary Clinton would not take this position. Right? There were very significant reasons why she wouldn't take this position. One, people felt, well, first of all, she had a great position in the Senate. The Senate, some of the great jobs of all time, all the prestige, a lot less pressure. Certainly she was in the workings to become the Senate Majority Leader, big time player, a lot of influence, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Why do you take this job for the headaches of Secretary of State? Anybody doesn't think Secretary of State has got a lot of headaches, just review the career of Condoleezza Rice. But it gets worse for them because, one, she had a substantial campaign debt, millions and millions of dollars, that she was certainly hoping the Obama administration would pay off from his campaign chest, or she could raise the money. The moment she took the job at State, she could not do that anymore. You can't be the designated Secretary of State and be raising money to pay off campaign debt. That goes away. So she had to eat that debt and pay it out of her own pocket. Not that they're going to be poor, trust me. Thirdly, huge problems for her husband, Bill Clinton, who had extensive international projects overseas that had to be pulled back completely, who was getting huge fees for speaking. That had to stop, and most importantly, he had raised huge amounts of money for his library. All presidents do this, no big deal. Generally, these names are kept private, and he had given some assurances that those names would be kept private. He had to release all those names. All of that had to happen for her to take the State job, and she did it anyway. Most interesting. Okay? The next most important job with respect to the issues that we're discussing would be Secretary of Energy. But another one that a lot of people don't think much about, very important job, but is generally not acknowledged as such, is the Secretary of Commerce. Commerce has a lot of influence and oversight over a lot of very significant areas of government, including scientific areas, national security stuff, a lot of things. If you look into it, you can easily see this. So let's be interested who's going to be Secretary of Commerce. Who did he pick? Bill Richardson. He who said that Roswell was in fact not explained by the government's explanation. Whoa! How about that? Now we're running 3 for 3 here. This is just the three, in other words, the three Democrats, highest-ranking Democrats connected to the UFO issue ever in the world, whatever, were just appointed to three major positions in the new administration. To me, this is like a neon sign. Just, they could have raised a giant neon sign over the transition headquarters saying, disclosure coming here, but it gets better. There are two more positions that are very important if disclosure is in the works, and I was very interested who they would select. Disclosure is in and of itself fairly trivial. You tell the world is ET's here. Okay, thank you very much. Nice talking to you. Going back to work here. There's ET. Okay, fine. Okay, they're here. What does it mean? Well, in some respects, it doesn't mean anything. Look, they're here, but unless they're going to come down and talk to us, what the hell, right? They come, they go, what are they going to do about it, right? It's like a cat that comes, visits you all the time in your backyard. I mean, nothing you can do about it. It comes, it goes, so what? Well, there's a big what here, as everybody knows, because disclosure, once that is out of the way, opens the door to the prize. And what is the prize? Prize is the ET technology that has been alluded to in a number of ways over the years through many sources and witnesses and researchers. But clearly, the two principal techs that we're interested in are the energy that drives these craft, you know, the ones that can do 10,000 miles an hour, and hang antigravitically in space, make non-inertial right turns, those craft. And the propulsion system, the way that it travels. That's a pretty significant technologies. And we're pretty confident they have had crash vehicles since the 40s, and they've had unlimited budget to work on them and study them at their leisure in underground facilities, just like in the movies. Okay? Hollywood gets it right more often than you might think. And we can't get to that tech. And if anybody has been paying attention, notice we kind of have some problems right now. Now, we can argue about what causes global warming, but I can assure you that if your house is underwater in Florida, you don't really give a damn. And if the if the entire ice sheets in the Antarctic, or the Arctic rather, melt and destroy the, quote, standard currents in the Atlantic and bring on a giant freeze, who cares why they melted If the tundra melts, right, in northern Eurasia and releases massive methane into the atmosphere, I can assure you no one is going to care why it melted, but they're sure going to care about the impact of that. So the point is, we've got those problems. Well, we've got economic problems. We have got massive, you name it, we got problems. Too many people, not enough planet, too much environmental impact, too many bad decisions piled up on one on top of another, and now it's you pick up the newspaper and it's like, you know, it's apocalypse on page one, it's Armageddon on page two, it's the end of the world as we know it on page three. This is getting rather distressing. All of this we know. We need that technology. We have got to have it. We need to put it into play. We need all the scientists in the world dealing with it to create solutions to our problems. Not new weapons, but new solutions. We can't get to that technology because the truth embargo has prevented that. End of truth embargo, up comes the tech. Now, that tech is, it's not complicated, it's all new physics, right? It's not physics. Their energy system is using a different kind of physics than our energy system. Their propulsion has a new kind of physics. And it's pretty cool physics. We're not talking prosaic stuff here. I'm sure it's pretty darn exotic. All right, now, this is all preparatory to the punchline. If you are going to be the disclosure president, and if that tech is going to be brought out, and you got to pick, who are you going to pick for the Secretary of Energy and your science advisor? Now, often the Secretary of Energy usually goes to a bureaucrat, to a administrator, or sometimes to a politician. Bill Richardson was a politician and an administrator. He was also Secretary, I mean, he's also Ambassador to the UN. He was Secretary of Energy. And if you look at the secretaries, have been along those lines. So they would normally pick such a person. But not if disclosure's in the works. If disclosure's in the works, you would want a world-class physicist as the Secretary of Energy. Who did they pick? A world-class Nobel Prize-winning physicist, Stephen Chu. Which leads us to the energy advisor. The energy advisor is a science advisor to the president's now cabinet-level position. He also runs the Office of Science and Technology Policy in the executive branch. Very important position, in case anybody hasn't been paying attention, since science is kind of critical to us, you know, keeping it all together here. Who did he pick? He picked another physicist, PhD in plasma physics, with a particular specialty and interest in energy. Holdren, John Holdren, currently at Harvard. So there you have it. The five key positions are held by Podesta, Clinton, Richardson, and two major physicists, Chu and Holdren. Folks, that's disclosure. That's got it written all over it. But there's two other people that need to be mentioned here, and it's non-trivial. This disclosure is a big deal, and it's more than just about science. It's more than just about physics. It's about a massive world-changing event with uncertain outcomes. And as we know, the truth embargo has been maintained by the military intelligence complex in some form or fashion, using what I refer to as cross-agency committees. Now, they're still around, and they're still plenty concerned and involved in this. Their concerns would be along these lines. That, look, if you're going to disclose the ET presence to the world, we don't know exactly what's going to happen, and we're very concerned that you're going to be responsive. We need the president's going to do this to be responsive to our needs, right, our concerns, with respect to maintaining national security and dealing with, quote, unintended consequences of disclosure and anticipated consequences of it. So if you're the president, you've got to assuage the military intelligence community. So if you're going to do that, there are two very important positions that you have to staff to demonstrate that response. They are the Secretary of Defense and the National Security Advisor. And in both cases, that's exactly what Obama did. He did not choose a strongly left-of-center person for either of those positions. In fact, he picked a registered independent, clearly leaning Republican, hardliner with a background that included CIA director, and I'm referring to Robert Gates. He left him at defense. And then for his national security advisor, he brings in a Marine general, commandant of the Marines, James Jones. Clearly the message there is, look, we're going to move ahead here, but we are concerned about the national security aspects of this, and we are going to address that too. And so there you have the disclosure leadership team of the Obama administration. Jones, Gates, Richardson, Clinton, Podesta, Chu, and Holdren. Podesta, by the way, could still take a significant position in the administration, though it's looking more like he will stay at the Center of American Progress, where he is, of course, the founder and CEO of that think tank, which and remain a behind-the-scenes strategist and thinker for the party, still a major player in the Democratic Party. So the long and the short of it is this. All of the indications from these appointments completely support the disclosure agenda, which, if they have any sense at all, has to occur within the first 100 days of the administration for a host of reasons, not the least of which, if they delay even 1 week too much, in other words, oh, we could do it, but we need an extra week, let me just think about it. They're going to wake up Monday morning, they're going to open up the Washington Post, and the headline is going to read, "The People's Republic of China has just announced to their citizens, 1.2 billion Chinese, that the world is being engaged by extraterrestrial beings that they have been aware of for some time. And they are now releasing that information to their people. And then they will deal with that." So there you have the current status of the Obama administration and disclosure agenda, I believe, underway.
Stepping back to Podesta, if he sees an increase in public interest through things such as your Million Facts on Washington project,
mm-hmm.
and he's only temporarily going to be working with the Obama transition team, do you think he will make any increased efforts toward the UFO topic after he's done working on the Obama transition?
Well, first of all, I believe the decision to disclose has already been made. Right? It's just a matter of getting it done. What role Podesta will play is, I can only speculate. The reason that PRG launched the Facts on Washington, Million Facts on Washington, the reason that we've been pounding away at this issue so aggressively is not so much to convince them to disclose. I'm being very frank here. I believe they intend to. The reason we're doing it is to make sure they don't change their mind. Right? Because something is always happening. Right? 1 month, it's the end of, you know, the destruction of Wall Street. Another, it's the invasion of Gaza. And then it's the terrorist attack in Mumbai. And then next year, it'll be somebody will blow something up in Afghanistan. There's always something happening that could mistakenly and unwisely persuade some internal management grand, oh, we just can't disclose now because things are just so disruptive. Big mistake. So we're keeping the pressure on. The reason we need people to start to keep sending those letters in to the transition office, particularly letters are the most powerful, emailing the transition office to change.gov, sending their questions in too, which I told you about, they have a question section now. Just keep pouring that stuff in is to make it clear that, like, you know, we like where you're going here and we want you to complete the job. We don't want your feet turned into clay here, which is a very endemic disease in Washington, D.C. Feet turned to clay in this town so fast, you wouldn't believe it. So that's the reason we're doing this, is to keep them focused and on track to do what they have to do. This is not going to be easy. I never said it was. But so what? I mean, you want to be president, you want to be the Senate Majority Leader, you want to be Secretary of State, you want to be Secretary of Defense, but you want it to be easy? Where does it say that running a major nation with 320 million people with global responsibilities on a planet that has six beams is going to be easy. Of course it's not easy. Incredibly hard. Well, that's why you pay. We pay you the big bucks. All right? Get it done. We don't have any more time for excuses. We don't have any more time for obfuscation. Get it done so we can move on with wherever the human race is going. Because right now, it's not going anywhere particularly attractive. So that's the reason we keep the pressure on. And I see no indications at this point that they are backing away from it. Now, sure as hell, I say this, Barack Obama will be asked a question 2 days from now, and he will say unequivocally that there's no extraterrestrial presence, and we have no desire to get into that. I don't think that's going to happen, but if it does, we will triple our efforts. We will come at them even harder, right? People make mistakes. Government make mistakes. They've made plenty. They're going to make plenty more. It's up to the American people to get increasingly adamant that, like, look, we'll spot you one, two, three mistakes, but after a while, we're going to hold your feet to the fire here. We expect things to happen. If they don't happen, we're going to be very upset. Now, the American people are starting to demonstrate their dissatisfaction with bad governance. They're tossing people out. They're tossing incumbents out of office like crazy, and they're capable of tossing hundreds more. They're capable of being pretty vociferous. They're starting to get the picture that things are pretty screwed up. And so this idea that they can play games with the issue or back away, I think they're starting to realize that's not a good idea. I think the American people are getting ready to really bring the hammer down on quote, any perceived ineffectiveness or irresoluteness on the part of our political leadership. They've had it, right? Look, unlike pocketbook issues, to really light a fire, not that there weren't plenty of small brush fires, you know, already going, but now that we've lost $4 or $5 trillion, the American people go, okay, enough is enough. And so we need to get things done. And if getting the ET presence acknowledged and getting that ET tech into play isn't something that needs to be done, I can't imagine what does. And the American people are starting to understand this, and they will absolutely not tolerate playing games with this issue any longer. And you will see it, trust me. If the Obama administration makes the fatal mistake of actually turning against this issue openly, I believe the response will be intense and most unpleasant for them. We are more than prepared to respond to any clay feet turning up in this new administration. And that's true on a lot of areas. There's a lot of areas where people are watching closely for this new administration to backtrack on some of its key issues. And I think the response to any backtracking is going to be pretty intense. So we're in a new era. See, I'm not one that believes. I never believed that everything is predetermined and that nothing happens without some uber power pulling strings. I know that there are forces up there at the top that have a lot of power and influence and money, and they often get their way, and they do move the chess pieces around. But I've never believed they have full control, and I believe the people, whether they're the people of the United States or Russia, even to some degree China, and many other countries, have and will have enormous influence over the policies of state. And I think it's important that we keep that in mind. And so I expect to see people increasingly more assertive. And this issue is right out there in the front. So I'm optimistic. Disclosure next year. No later than April the 30th. That's the 100-day mark, which is kind of a, you know, traditionally important period in a new administration, the first 100 days. And that's fine. That's a good number. So April 30th is the first 100 days.
I have a question here from someone here in our virtual auditorium here in Talpoc who would like to know how to find your Facebook page.
Well, if you're not in Facebook and you just go to Facebook.com and you put in Million Facts on Washington, I think in the search thing, it will come up. Now, I don't know if you can look at it if you're not a Facebook member. If you bring up my page, Stephen Bassett, again, you can't look at the page. You can see some things like my friends and things like that. But in order to actually see a profile, you have to actually join Facebook, which takes all of 10 minutes, and it's free. I think if you do a search on the Million Facts, though, actually Million Facts in Washington on Google search, actually the Facebook page will come up there. I think it's like on the top 20. You'll see it, and I think you can jump to it there. So it's a little tricky. But I encourage people to join Facebook. I mean, look, there's plenty of stuff out there. MySpace is big, too, but I can't deal with all of them. Facebook is exploding. It's growing at a phenomenal rate. It's up to 130 million, probably 200 million within 6 months or less. It's just structured more appropriately for what I would call networking and more serious stuff, issues, causes, groups, this type of thing. MySpace is cool, too. But Facebook is a little more that way, and it's just loaded with stuff. So join it and get involved. We really need people to join the Facebook group, Million Facts on Washington, because one of the most powerful aspects of the Facebook groups, which is not true of a Facebook personal page, is that you can have 1, 2, 10, 20, 100,000 people belong to that group. Then then the person running the group, in this case myself, I can send a message to all of them through Facebook for nothing in a few seconds. This is hugely valuable. I can't even tell you. It's incredibly difficult to build up a substantial email list, trust me. Brutal. Facebook, again, if people all sign up, they like it. And there are groups on Facebook that have 1 million members, right? So if you've got an important cause and people get on Facebook and they join that group representing that issue, then it's possible to correspond with them incredibly cheaply and easily. And that's why we need people to sign up for the Million Facts on Washington group, so that I can then send them updates without having to go through a bulk mail operation. Just send it right through Facebook. And of course, it's not spam. They don't want it. Just you know, disengage from the group. Just sign off. But if you want to be in touch on the issue, then you go there. I may set up a group for Paradigm Research Group. I haven't decided about that. This is incredibly powerful stuff. I got to tell you, the future of politics and activism is all on the Internet. Worldwide. Trust me. It's all there. You want to get involved, it's in the Internet. You want to connect, it's on the Internet. You want to know about issues, it's on the Internet. That's where it all is. So the sooner you get on there, the sooner you can get involved. And believe me, there's plenty to get involved in. But the UFO issue, the ET issue, has a very substantial presence in all of this, not surprisingly, and will continue to grow. And when disclosure takes place, the Internet and all of these groups will explode, and not only the number of them, but also the size of them, and so that we can all communicate and deal with this issue globally through the net, which is great. I think that the presence of the Internet is one of the most important aspects of disclosure, in that, frankly, if you were going to disclose the ET presence, you would want an Internet to exist. Right? If it didn't, you'd want it to exist. Well, it exists. And so it will play an incredibly important role in the post-disclosure world, and it just happens to be here. Whether that's a coincidence, I don't know. But it will be important, and will help to make it all go that much more smoothly.
Do you have any new projects in the works?
Yeah, I'm in the process of finishing up a book with Grant Cameron. We have already one publisher bidding on it. We're hoping for another to join in the next couple of days. So we'll have a contract soon, hopefully. And that's going to be a major project for me over the next couple of months. Of course, the X Conference, we need to solidify that, and so we can hopefully either get it done in April. Hold it. It's a major project. I'm hoping to launch the Paradigm News Daily, which is a major project. Talked about it. It's been delayed, but the infrastructure is pretty much ready to go. I just need to do it. This could be a significant project. And most importantly, of course, ready to jump if something happens with respect to the new administration that clearly indicates they're backing away from a disclosure agenda. If that happens, then it's going to jump very fast and really get on their case. Because there's there's plenty, there's other things to do, right? I can assure you, I've backed away from Hillary Clinton. We were really building a fire there. Because as you know, up until, late in the campaign, she was the front runner. And it was assumed she was going to be the nominee. And we were moving aggressively to make sure the world knew that this potential nominee for the Democratic Party, the president, is connected to the UFO issue, to the Rockefeller Initiative. It's possible that many of the superdelegates made their decision to shift to Obama because they were concerned about having a nominee with that kind of a connection. Who knows? In any event, we backed away because she was not going to be the nominee. Obama was. But there's plenty we can do. They cannot back away from this issue. There is much more we can do to connect these people to this issue. Look, there's no malice intended here. I happen to believe that those who aspire to lead nations, to be paid to run nations, to be president, vice president, to be Secretary of State, Secretary of Energy, those who are going to lead nations have to be devoted to, one, first and foremost, the welfare of the country and the people they serve, not their own interest. And the idea that they can't deal with something because they're going to be embarrassed or because they might be ridiculed or because it's just not fashionable, none of that stuff is acceptable. If you want to lead and you deal with the issues of the time, and this is one of the major issues of our time, and failure to address it is utterly unacceptable. And we will do everything in our power to make sure they know that and to connect them to the issue in every way so that in due course they will not be able to go anywhere in front of any camera and any member of the press and not be asked about it. What about what you said in that wrote in that book of Secretary Richardson? Secretary Clinton, why did you not talk about the Rockefeller Initiative for 15 years after it took place? Why hasn't your husband talked about it? Mr. Podesta, what is the situation on disclosure? Why haven't you talked about it? Eventually the press is going to get on this. And you know when the press really gets onto something, they can be relentless. And once that line is crossed and these questions are fully in play, they're going to be asked and asked again, and there's going to be no place to hide. That's what's going to happen. Or they can continue with the agenda at hand and reap the benefits without all the pain and disclose to the American people the truth. And they will be richly rewarded for that. But if they back away, I can assure you there is an internet movement there ready to jump on them like a ton of bricks. And that's the number one project on my agenda, ready to go. I just hope I don't have to go there. I just want to continue these other projects and continue to expand public awareness and build infrastructure to deal with a post-disclosure world and not have to expend any more energy trying to get these people to do their damn job, to put it bluntly.
Stephen, we have less than a minute to go. Would you like to give your website addresses out again?
Certainly. The Paradigm Research Group is ParadigmResearchGroup.org. That's the main portal. Facts on Washington, Million Facts on Washington, FactsOnWashington.org. The Paradigm Research Group's Political Action Committee, XPAC, is at x-ppac.org, x-ppac.org. The X-Conference is x-conference.com. And by the way, when you go to PRG, it's not just all about PRG. That site, the main PRG site, has over 10,000 external links, meaning there are 10,000 links on the PRG main site to other things outside the PRG main site. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Not 100, not 1,000, 10,000. Books, magazines, other websites, news articles, on and you could spend months on that site. That's the way it was set up, right? So those are the sites, and then, of course, as far as getting in touch with me, you want to email prg@paradigmresearchgroup.org.
Well, thank you again, Stephen, for being on tonight. You're always a wealth of information.
Appreciate it. Appreciate it, Dee, and you keep doing a great job. keep expanding the shows by appreciating also to Joe, who's doing a tremendous job building Paranormal UFO Radio. I predict, again, very soon, you're going to have a much larger audience.
Oh, I certainly hope so. And if the disclosure comes about, would probably be out of a job, right?
Who, me?
Well, all of us in ufology.
No, that's what I'm trying to say. When disclosure comes, that's when the party in the real begins. I can assure you, your audience will grow exponentially. Remember, this is the biggest event in human history, and the interest in it will be global, and there are 6 billion people on the planet, and unlike almost anything else that's ever happened, the attention of the vast majority of all 6 of those billion people are going to be on this issue, and when you get that many people focused on something, I can assure you, it will be quite spectacular to see. So,
I
forward
to hope so.
Mm-hmm.
Well, unfortunately, we're all out of time tonight. Excuse me. I want to thank everyone tuning in, and also thank those who joined us here in the Pal Talk Auditorium. Thanks again, Stephen. You're always a great guest.
Very welcome.
Stay tuned for Voice of the People, hosted by November Hansen. Tonight, her guest is author and filmmaker William W. Warwick IV. And please join us again next Saturday on UFO Paranormal Radio Network for another episode of Eye to the Sky, the UFO Synopsis, when my guest will be Art Campbell in the beginning of a 2-part series with Art Campbell. Until then, keep an eye to the sky. Good night, everyone.